This is Monitor on WRRS. I'm Charlie Van Sant. Great to have you with us today. Monitor is a show about radio, broadcasting history, amateur radio, AM, FM, shortwave, and more. Today we're going to look at Monitor on NBC Radio, an attempt by NBC to keep commercial radio competitive with the newly developed television. I've named this program Monitor as a tribute to that long-running series. We'll start with the opening of the very first Monitor program on Sunday, June 5th, 1955.
Monitor. 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. This is Monitor, reporting the nation and the world. The combined radio and television networks of the National Broadcasting Company bring you the premier broadcast of Monitor, the new NBC radio service originating from NBC's Electronic Communication Center, Radio Central, New York. Now, to introduce Monitor to America, here is the president of the National Broadcasting Company, Mr. Sylvester L. Weaver.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Monitor, our new NBC weekend radio service. This is a preview, which will be seen on television for the next hour, and it'll be heard on radio until midnight tonight, New York time. But beginning next week, Monitor will start each Saturday morning at 8 o'clock New York time and run until midnight on Sunday. It will bring you a continuous flow of items of high interest and information. Monitor is for all of you, wherever you are, in your cars, at home, at the beach, with your portables, everywhere. And on Monitor, we are going to throw away the radio clock. We are going to bring you what we hope is the radio pattern of the future. News and information and entertainment in the vignette form, where the items are as long as they need to be or as short. Well, over a weekend, there'll be a 50 people serving you from Radio Central here. And among them and here today for you to meet are Dave Garraway and Bob and Ray, Morgan Beatty, Walter Kiernan, Clifton Fadiman, Ben Grauer, and many, many others. Now, including in this group, we have our executive producer of Monitor, a man who has been a part of a number of great pioneering ventures in NBC, Jim Fleming. Jim, I've talked about something about the show that we're going to have today. Perhaps you'd better tell us about the people and the places that we're going to be hearing in the next hour.
Well, thank you, Pat. In a moment, we're going to turn our live cameras and microphones to the West Coast, to Hermosa Beach, California, where a Sunday afternoon jazz concert's underway. Then up the coast we go, and we're going to a place where there is no freedom. That would be San Quentin Prison.
San Quentin?
San Quentin.
We going inside?
Inside, well, yes, Monitor goes places.
So long as we don't have to stay. Well, now, what about sports today?
Well, the most unusual sports commentator in the business is standing by at his favorite tavern.
And news and opinion.
Well, we'll have the late headlines, comments by columnist Roscoe Drummond from Washington. Istanbul's coming up on the circuit.
And travel?
A plane is standing by at this moment to go nonstop to London from Idlewild Airport. A Monitor transmitter is aboard.
Good enough. What about entertainment?
Well, Art Van Dam Quintet live from Chicago.
Good.
Jerry Lewis filmed in the Catskills. Live summer theater pickup, Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
What about philosopher and thinkers?
Well, we have yourself, sir.
Well, now, let's steady. Let's talk about what we've really got.
Well, not to mention President Pusey of Harvard and Bill Saltonstall of Phillips Exeter.
Oh, yes.
The show was the brainchild of legendary NBC Radio and Television Network President Sylvester Pat Weaver, whose career bridged classic radio and television's infancy and who sought to keep radio alive in a television age, as I mentioned earlier. Believing that broadcasting could and should educate as well as entertain, Weaver fashioned a series to do both with some of the best remembered and best regarded names in broadcasting, entertainment, journalism, and literature taking part. Monitor and the Sunday afternoon TV documentary series Wide Wide World were Weaver's last two major contributions to NBC as he left the network within a year of Monitor's premiere. The enduring signature of the show was the Monitor Beacon, a mix of audio-manipulated telephone tones and the sound of an oscillator emitting the Morse code signal for the letter M for Monitor. It was described by one source as a tape loop made from a sequence of 1950s AT&T telephone line switching tones generated by analog oscillators. The beacon introduced the show and was used in transitions, for example, to station breaks, accompanied by the tagline, "You're on the Monitor Beacon." When Monitor began in June 1955 at 4 p.m., the first hour of the program was simulcast on NBC TV. The initial broadcast lasted 8 hours from 4 p.m. through midnight. Following the Monitor Beacon, Morgan Beatty was the first ever voice heard on Monitor, and you heard him just a moment ago. After an introduction by Pat Weaver, news headlines by Dave Garraway, and a routine by Bob and Ray, Garraway cued Monitor's opening music remote, live jazz by Howard Rumsey in the Lighthouse All-Stars and the Lighthouse Cafe in Hermosa Beach, California. It was the first of many jazz remotes in the weeks to come. On the following Saturday, June 18th, Monitor began broadcasting 40 consecutive hours each weekend from 8 a.m. on Saturday to midnight on Sunday. Monitor aired from a mammoth NBC studio called Radio Central, created especially for the program on the fifth floor of the RCA building in Midtown Manhattan, the same space which is now home, by the way, to MSNBC. NBC unveiled Radio Central to the national television audience during a segment in the October 16, 1955 premiere of Wide, Wide World, including a Monitor interview with Alfred Hitchcock, seen through glass in an adjacent studio and minus audio, and a Monitor newscast with audio billed at cost of $150,000, a lot of money in 1955. The glass-enclosed studios of Radio Central were described by Pat Weaver as a listening post of the world. From Radio Central, anchors and hosts, initially dubbed communicators, presided over 3 or 4 hour segments of the show. As well-known entertainment and broadcasting figures, they gave Monitor an impressive marquee. Cindy Adams, Johnny Andrews, Jim Backus, Red Damon, Dan Daniel, Hugh Downs, Frank Gallup, Dave Garraway, Peter Hackus, Bill Hanrahan, Bill Hayes, Bob Haynes, Candy Downs, Durwood Kirby, Jim Lowe, Frank McGee, Barry Nelson, Leon Pearson, Tony Randall, Peter Roberts, also Ted Steele, John Cameron Swayze, Tony Taylor, and David Wayne were all communicators during the 20-year run. Many hosts and announcers of game shows were also communicators, including Mel Allen of Jackpot Bowling, Ted Brown, Bill Cullen, The Price is Right, and I Guess, Hugh Downs, Concentration, Clifton Fadiman, Information Please, Art Fleming from Jeopardy, Art Ford, The Art Ford Show, Alan Funt, Joe Garagiola, Sale of the Century, Ben Grauer, Information Please, Monty Hall, Video Village, and Let's Make a Deal, Wayne Howell of Concentration, Walter Keeman, Who Said That, Hal March, The $64,000 Question, Ed McMahon, Concentration, Missing Links, Snap Judgment, Gary Moore, I've Got a Secret to Tell the Truth, Henry Morgan, Burt Parks, Break the Bank, Gene Rayburn, The Match Game, Don Russell, and John Bartholomew Tucker. In later years, Don Imus, Murray the K, Robert W. Morgan, and Wolfman Jack helmed the Saturday evening segment until it was eliminated. The last hosts of Monitor in 1975 were Big Wilson and John Bartholomew Tucker. Behind the scenes, Monitor's executive producers included Jim Fleming, Frank Papp, Al Capstaff, and Bob Moorer. Remote segments originating from locations around the country were a regular part of Monitor, setting it apart from studio-bound broadcasts and taking advantage of network radio's reach. A weekend might include reports from a festival in Tucson, a golf championship in North Carolina, NBC's correspondent in Moscow, or on preparations for the Olympic Games in Melbourne, Australia. Regular segments included Celebrity Chef, Ring Around the World, and On the Line with Bob Considine. On-the-spot live remote broadcasts from New York City jazz clubs on Saturday evenings included both jazz groups and vocalists, such as Al Hibbler. In the show's early years, weather reports delivered in a breathy, sexy voice by Teddy Thurman in the role of Miss Monitor. Various broadcasting personalities heard delivering reports and segments included Jerry Baker, the Master Gardener, Morgan Beatty, Joyce Brothers, Al Capp, Paul Christman, Marlene Dietrich, Len Dillon, Chris Economacki, Arlene Francis, Betty Furness, Kurt Gowdy, Skitch Henderson, Chet Huntley, Graham Kerr, The Galloping Gourmet, Joe Kirkwood Jr., Fran Colton, Sandy Koufax, Bill Mazur, Lindsay Nelson, Kyle Rote, Gene Shalit, also Jim Simpson, Barbara Walters, and many NBC News correspondents. Many comedy talents appeared through the years, including Woody Allen, Bill Cosby, Selma Diamond, Phyllis Diller, Bob Hope, Ernie Kovacs, Bob Newhart, Gene Shepherd, and Jonathan Witters. The comedy team of Mike Nichols and Elaine May appeared on Monitor, as did Jerry Stiller and Ann Mira, Bob and Ray, who won a 1957 Peabody Award for their Monitor comedy routines, often remained at NBC during the weekend to step in if technical problems developed with remote segments. In addition to Bob and Ray, several Monitor regulars in early years helped the show bridge the classic and modern radio eras. Henry Morgan had been a controversial radio comedian in the 1940s. Clifton Fadiman was the legendary host of Information Please, the highbrow quiz show. Mel Allen and Red Barber were familiar baseball voices, respectively, for the New York Yankees and the Brooklyn Dodgers since the 1940s. Gary Moore rose to fame as Jimmy Durante's radio sidekick. Burt Parks was host of the radio hits Stop the Music and Break the Bank. Several radio comedy shows were revived in the form of regular five-minute Monitor segments, including Duffy's Tavern, Jim and Marianne Jordan, better known as old-time radio favorites, Fibber McGee and Molly, held down a regular Monitor segment and were said to be negotiating a new long-term commitment to the show when Marianne died of cancer in 1961. Peg Lynch and Alan Bunce, Vintage Radio's Ethel and Albert, also performed the five-minute Monitor vignettes from 1963 to 1965. Lynch made several of the vignettes available on compact disc for OTR collectors. The innovative approach of Monitor made it a profitable success for NBC Radio over many years, helping to sustain the network in an era when network radio was collapsing. Its strong start and high popularity led the show to air on Friday nights from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. in 1957, all in addition to 32 weekend hours reduced from 40 in late 1955. By 1961, however, the weeknight Monitor was gone. The weekend schedule was cut in half from 32 to 16 hours each weekend. This was not as drastic a cut as it seems, as some programming that had been counted as part of Monitor's 32 hours, such as Sunday morning religious broadcasts and the radio version of Meet the Press, continued to air on NBC outside of the Monitor schedule. This was further shortened in 1974 to only 12 live weekend hours. Radio stations, especially in large markets, had increasingly adopted personality-driven formats featuring local disc jockeys and sought to establish a clear-cut musical or talk identity for themselves. Because of this, Monitor's Something for Everyone programming often did not fit in with schedules and viewpoints of stations. Fewer affiliates carried the program in major markets. Due to this, many of the show's sponsors also pulled away, requiring a shortening of the schedule to keep the costs low. However, NBC refused to get rid of its biggest money-making radio show without a fight. The network introduced new music formats and changed hosts, including Don Imus, Wolfman Jack, Robert W. Morgan, to alternate on Saturday night segments to make the format faster-paced. NBC also created a custom package to allow stations to carry portions that they saw fit. Despite NBC's efforts, it had appeared that Monitor's time had come and gone. The network finally gave up fighting the trend by fall of 1974, and simply continued planning and programming the show's six-hour blocks for each Saturday and Sunday, now reduced between 6 p.m. and midnight on Saturdays and noon and 6 p.m. on Sundays. On January 25th, 26th, 1975, just 4.5 months shy of celebrating its 20th anniversary, Monitor spent its last 12 hours looking back at its 20-year history with hosts Big Wilson and John Bartholomew Tucker. Many clips were played, including Dave Garraway's interview with Marilyn Monroe on the show's first day, Frank McGee's talk with Martin Luther King Jr. in the early 1960s, Bob and Ray spoofing Miss Monitor, and reporter Helen Hall riding on a roller coaster. On January 26, Wilson hosted from noon to 3 p.m., while Tucker hosted from 3 to 6 p.m. The program's last guest was Hugh Downs, who talked about his earlier days on Monitor with Tucker. And during the show's final minutes, Sammy Kahn sang about the show's history, followed by Tucker thanking the listeners and staff, after which he said his last farewell. The final sound heard on Monitor was of the beacon, followed by the NBC chimes at 5:58:50 p.m. Approximately 125 stations still carried the program on its last day. However, very few were in major markets. And here are the final moments of that final broadcast.
Charlie Rich, most beautiful girl in the world. Well, there are songwriters and songwriters. When it comes to writing lyrics, there's one who stands very tall. Love and Marriage, High Hopes, Call Me Irresponsible, Pocket Full of Dreams. And he wrote those and many more.
Well, this is Sammy Kahn in Beverly Hills with a lyric to an old, old song for an old, old friend, Monitor. Monitor first came around in 1955. It's been a long, long time. And it had a brand new sound, 'cause Monitor was live. It's been a long, long time. And every doubter soon became a true believer. So here's a bow to our then Prez Pat Weaver. For 20 years, old Monitor has managed to survive. It's been a long, long time. And we had communicators like Dave Garraway. It's been a long, long time. Clifton Fetterman, Frank Gallup all had things to say. It's been a long, long time. And if you really want to speak of staying power, even way back then we had Ben Grauer. Men we think of with affection to this very day. It's been a long, long time. Nichols and Nate and Bob and Ray gave humor to the show. It's been a long, long time. And that Harry Golden with his southern Yiddish glow. It's been a long, long time. And when we needed raucous laughter for a filler, Monitor could count on Phyllis Diller. Marlena Dietrich's beauty hints were big on radio. It's been a long, long time. Then Steve White asked, could we write a 10th year birthday song? It's been a long, long time. So Sammy Kahn and James Van Heusen wrote the whole day long. It's been a long, long time. I can't believe that 20 years are now behind us, and it took four choruses to remind us. It's Auld Lang Syne for Monitor, so sing it loud and strong. It's been a
thank you, Sammy Kahn. What do you say after that except thank you? It's time, my time, I guess, to say goodbye to all of you listeners who become friends of this program in its nearly 20 years of existence. We leave you reluctantly. We leave you, we hope, with some indelible memories. We certainly have them. This is John Bartholomew Tucker, and you'll never hear this sound live at this hour again. This is Monitor on NBC. Thank you.
And with that, we conclude our tribute to one of the great radio network programs that ran for 20 years, Monitor on NBC.
This is the year of the lark. The lark is the car of the year. Look what's new for you from the lark. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's the new convertible, seats five adults in style. It's so pert and perky, runs on pennies per mile.
The Lark by Studebaker, yours in six stunning styles for 60, including the new convertible and...
Look what else is new for you. It's here, it's here, it's here, it's here. It's a new Lark wagon with four convenient doors. And it's out for fun and frolic, but it's built for chores.
Look at the Lark yourself. Learn how it's been proven by 750 million miles of owner use. Visit your Studebaker dealer and see how nothing has been spared to build quality into the Lark. Discover why it's the value car of the year.
The Lark is the car of the year.
NBC's Monitor and every other radio and television program would not have been possible without the development of the radio wave, of course. The first successful radio waves were developed using devices, mechanical devices, which created sparks. Those sparks were combined with Morse code to transmit messages over long distances. They were crude, and they could take up huge amounts of bandwidth. There was no way to really tune them efficiently, but they were better than the alternative, which of course was nothing. Retired GE aviation engineer Rod Owen explains.
The first radio signals, in fact for many years, probably close to two decades, spark was the only means of generating a radio wave. Now, the sparks were very broadly tuned, but they could be tuned. However, spark could not be precisely tuned. The large commercial stations made attempts to tune their transmitters, although even they were quite broad. However, the experimenters that built simple apparatus at home had very coarse tuning or broad tuning of their transmitters, and their signals were very wide in bandwidth. After spark, a guy called Alexanderson, I think he was from Sweden, started to try to produce a continuous wave with a very high frequency alternator. And this was partially successful and could be tuned to a much narrower band than a spark transmitter. However, modern radios that can be accurately tuned had to wait until the vacuum tube came along. Not just any old vacuum tube. The earliest vacuum tube was only a diode and it couldn't amplify. A guy called Fleming perfected the triode, which added a grid to the internal construction of a diode tube. And the grid allowed the tube to amplify. Once amplifiers had been made, oscillators could be constructed, and these oscillators could be far more accurately tuned than a spark transmitter. And in fact, then the oscillator could be followed by successive stages of amplification using larger and larger vacuum tubes until you developed the power required to transmit a radio signal. Once these tubes were available, spark transmitters disappeared almost overnight, apart from a few die-hard experimenters, but eventually they were causing so much interference to other radio communication that the government outlawed spark. In fact, I believe perhaps one night a year or something like that, the government allows enthusiasts that like to construct historical apparatus to go on the air with very low-powered spark transmitters. Also, there is one Alexanderson alternator still in existence, in operating condition, at a museum over in Sweden. And one night a year, the Swedish government allows enthusiasts to put this Alexanderson alternator on the air, and it can be received thousands of miles away. In fact, it has been received in the US on a few occasions since they've been doing this commemorative operation on one evening of the year.
Now, do I understand correctly that it was probably limited to Morse code?
The Alexanderson alternator initially was Morse code only. I should say that all of the Spark transmitters were Morse code only. They were simply keyed on and off.
I would think it would be very difficult to put a voice over a Spark.
Well, some people actually tried it by using a carbon microphone in series with the actual Spark. It's not something you would do with present-day technology, and it was crude and didn't work very well. So it was never capitalized commercially, although some experimenters did try telephony using a microphone and a Spark transmitter.
Fascinating. Well, we'll have to do a program about that one of these days.
Yes, I mean, you can actually simulate it in the lab or, you know, at home across a table, low power. You can actually build your own small Spark transmitter and receiver.
So to very grossly simplify it, it's essentially when the guy next door has his lawnmower on and my radio starts buzzing, he's actually causing a spark wave to hit my receiver. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Our resource material came from the Monitor Tribute Pages, Wikipedia, and oldtimeradiofans.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Charlie Van Sant, and this is Monitor on WRRS. Thank you.